Welcome to the Making Sense Podcast. This is Sam Harris. Today I'm answering some more questions that were submitted by subscribers on my Substack page and discussing some current events. Once again, the voice you're hearing on the other end is that of my manager and business partner, Jaron Lowenstein. We're hoping to continue this series of episodes. So if you're a subscriber to the podcast, you can submit topics over on Substack. And if you're not a subscriber, you can become one at samharris.org/subscribe.
Most Jews I talk to tell me that they feel safer with Trump in office now. Why do you think they're wrong?
Well, admittedly, that's kind of a mixed story. I get it. If you're a single issue voter and your issue was Israel, I kind of understand that because Biden and Harris were making noises that seemed guaranteed to make you uncomfortable. Yeah, so I mean, the moral confusion left of center about the war in Gaza and about Hamas and about the whole peace process with the Palestinians, it's understandable that if that was your issue, you thought virtually anything is better than that, right? And Trump, you know, in his defense and in defense of his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, first time around did demonstrate some considerable support for Israel and, you know, moving the embassy to Jerusalem. I mean, all of these things were big moves that other presidents hadn't taken. The reason why Trump is not reliable is that he's not reliable. He's not a serious person. He doesn't actually understand anything. He has allegiances which are vulnerable to the next moment he feels personally slighted by somebody, right? So I would remind you that the only thing he said in the immediate aftermath of October 7th was something incredibly petty. I mean, actually psychopathically petty about how Netanyahu had not been sufficiently loyal to him or something. I mean, it was completely insane, analogous to his first comments after
the
World Trade Center came down after 9/11. And he said, you know, many people say I've got the tallest building in Manhattan now. I mean, an absolutely disqualifying piece of moral lunacy. And that's what he was like after October 7th, right? So he's totally capable of changing his feelings about Israel based on his feelings about how a leader there has treated him. And he's also capable of pitching his brilliant idea of turning Gaza into Six Flags Magic Mountain and trolling the entire world by releasing, I think this came from the official White House X account. Correct me if I'm wrong. It was either Trump's account or the official White House. Honestly, I think it was the official White House. Other things like this have come on that channel. It's become a pure troll account. And he released this AI video of, you know, a golden statue of him effectively being worshipped in Gaza. I mean, it's insane that we have a president who's engaging with this immensity of human suffering and, you know, danger for the future with this kind of know-nothingism and just, you know, self-absorption, right? So he's not a reliable partner to Israel. He's also probably deeply conflicted with his economic ambitions in the Gulf states. You know, he would sell Israel out to for a hotel deal in Saudi, I think. I mean, he's not a serious moral actor.
Those are speculations. I mean, I understand he hasn't, though. And, you know, I think he has been generally better if you are a single voter for Israel. But I'm not even talking about Israel. I'm talking about the Jews that I talk to that tell me they just feel safer here in the U.S.
Okay, but the thing they're ignoring is that Trump and his enablers continue to play well with the scariest anti-Semites in the West, the right-wing anti-Semites. I mean, if you're talking about anti-Semites who actually want to kill the Jews now, you're talking about not the far left on college campuses. You're talking, what's adjacent to the far left are the real Islamists and jihadists, right, who have confused them. But on the right, you're also talking about scary anti-Semites. You're talking about neo-Nazis. You're talking about conspiracists who think that the Jews are controlling the world economy and sabotaging it for their own personal gain. Trump is the guy who will never say anything bad, really, about the far, far conspiracy-addled right, because for some reason he thinks he needs them. I mean, it's just all too obvious. This goes all the way back to his first campaign when David Duke was supporting him, and he pretended not to know who David Duke was when he was pressed on, you know, would you disavow this support? He absolutely knows who David Duke is, right? It's just, there's a game of footsie being played with the most odious characters on the far right, all of whom are anti-Semitic lunatics, and Trump is playing that game. And when you look at the people who are out in Trumpistan, the great influencers of Trumpistan, you know, the Tucker Carlsons of the world, they are playing a game of, you know, Holocaust revisionism and denialism that is frankly terrifying, and it is pouring gasoline on the most dangerous current of anti-Semitism in America. That's happening on the right. It's not the left. It's not the people encamped, you know, on Ivy League campuses who are confused about what's happening in Gaza. So it's a very mixed picture, Trump's support for the Jews, and it's by no means optimal, though it is understandable that people who are focused on the Israel piece couldn't see it in the run-up to the election.
Okay, so maybe Trump just likes to be liked by a lot of people, but he's also the one who put the anti-Semitism task force together, and he's also done things that feel, if you're Jewish, that feel like, okay, he's taking action. He might still keep those lines of communication open, and he might, you know, pretend to not know these people, but it does appear, if you're Jewish, that somebody finally has your back. What are they getting wrong with that? Why is what they feel or they seem to appear to be witnessing wrong? You just think it's short-lived, potentially?
Well, because he and his team are not actually ethical and well-informed, right? I mean, he's surrounded by loyalists, and he honestly does not have an ethical bone in his body, right? So he's bound to get things wrong because he's motivated by something other than clear-sighted, you know, moral integrity and ethical principles. So yeah, on the college piece, yes, it's totally understandable that people would want something like a heavy-handed response to the moral confusion in those institutions. And there's something satisfying about that. But because Trump is actually motivated by pure vindictiveness against the so-called elites, and he doesn't actually know what a university is good for, he's not actually a defender of free speech, right? I mean, though the MAGA cult thinks that, you know, free speech absolutism is one of their principles, it's simply not. So rounding up someone whose only, you know, moral infraction was to write an op-ed in, you know, castigating the IDF, right, and deport them, right, just for a pure act of speech, that's, you know, deeply corrosive, not just to the life of the you know, that specific student immigrant, but to the culture of a college campus, right? Like, this is not what our government should be doing. Yes, the campuses needed a corrective to their moral confusion and to the outburst of anti-Semitism that they allowed to happen there, and to their, you know, ethical double standards, which were, you know, totally self-evident to anyone who was watching those congressional hearings and who wasn't a woke lunatic. But having the government put this kind of pressure on the institutions and defund the most important science, right, to cut the budgets of not just the soft sciences and the humanities that tend to be more confused on these issues, but the hard sciences and then medical research. I mean, it's been a disaster that what Trump and Doge have been doing to the you know, the National Science Foundation and to our universities, and it's, you know, it stands a chance of, you know, wrecking the stature and even the economy of our country. You know, I don't think we want Hamas supporting students or immigrants of any kind in this country, right? So we should be very slow to give visas, student and otherwise, to people before we have vetted them. And so our vetting process needs to be better, and we need to exclude Islamists and jihadists and just, you know, ideologues who have no sympathy for, you know, Western values, right? I mean, people who want to destroy our society or see it replaced with something else are not people we should be eager to have in this country. So at the border and in the immigration process, we should have a very fine filter, right? But once people are here and they're expressing, you know, odious ideas, we should have a different standard for deporting them, right? Like, it's not the same gesture. Not letting them in is very different from showing up in masks in the middle of the night and hauling them out of their dorm room and putting them on a plane to nowhere. That's a completely different level of intrusion in the lives of normal people. I mean, forget about the people being deported, you know, without due process. That's awful. You're going to get the wrong, you know, what does due process mean? It's the only safeguard against getting the wrong people, getting innocent people. This is all so totally ill-conceived because we don't have serious, sane, and ethical people in charge.
Yeah. So, I mean, I go back to this. I hear all that and I agree with it. Most of it. I can't remember everything you said, but there was a lot there. But I do I think that people feel like they do have sort of a golem in the White House. And even if he says things like, you know, if the hostages aren't back by Saturday, there'll be hell to pay. And I guess what I'm wondering is, are you thinking that's just short-lived because, you know, he could change his mind on something quickly? And
no, he's actually harming the universities. He's harming the culture of free speech that his acolytes imagine he's protecting, right? And I think the net result of all of this is going to be more anti-Semitism. Quite literally, everything is wrong with this except the initial impulse to feel like we have to do something about the problem of anti-Semitism on these campuses. And more generally, the problem of ideological capture by Islamists and far-left lunatics, right? I mean, so it's not just anti-Semitism. It's basically a repudiation of Western values, Enlightenment values, free speech, I mean, any kind of sane political and moral order over there, right? I mean, that is a problem that we have to address. But to have people who know nothing, who are self-dealing jerks, right, who are launching meme coins to enrich themselves, and are literally, this is the most corrupt administration anyone could imagine. The idea that they're going to do something well in this area should be quite literally unthinkable to you. And it's so obviously not going well immediately. The repudiation of due process is insane. I mean, the only thing that safeguards our democracy from a slide into actual authoritarianism and tyranny is due process. If people can arrest you and send you to a torture room in El Salvador, right, without having taken the necessary steps to figure out who you are, right, and once they admit having made errors, they just laugh about it and do nothing to get you back, that's the end of the line, right? I mean, there is no further slide that we need to worry about into authoritarianism. That's it.
Right. Well, it seems the right out there has Abrego Garcia down as sort of one of the worst human beings on the planet, and the left,
whoever he is, without due process, it doesn't matter.
Right.
I mean, so again, generically, we can all agree that we don't want any MS-13 gang members in the United States. If they're citizens, we want to watch their behavior, and the moment they commit a crime, we want to throw them in prison. If they're not citizens, we want them out of the country. Everyone should be able to agree about that. But if you can't take the steps to figure out who anyone is because you're in such a rush to make a political point, and you're so callous that when it's obvious you're making errors, you don't care about the suffering you're causing, I mean, our country is now unrecognizable.
Did you see the picture of him having that nice latte at the restaurant?
Yeah, did you see the picture that was obviously that was so Photoshopped awkward. That Trump thought was the Arial font of MS-13 on the guy's knuckles that had been Photoshopped there to illustrate the meaning of the symbols on his knuckles?
Oh God!
Trump thought that was actually on his skin. I mean, this is forget about the corruption, forget about the lack of just moral integrity. The level of incompetence on display here. I mean, it's signal gate all the way down. It's people who just aren't serious. Yeah, it should be terrifying to people. I mean, the problem is no one right of center is keeping score. It's like, yes, okay, Trump is this great defender of Israel, right? And what's Israel's real problem? It's Iran. Well, what's Trump doing with Iran now? He's effectively trying to renegotiate the Obama deal that, on his account, was the worst deal ever signed by our country. It remains to be seen what's going to happen with Iran, but Trump is not thus far behaving in a way that should console any of the hawks who think that the regime change in Iran is our only plausible goal. He's not, again, we don't know. I don't know what's going to happen because he could change his mind in 5 minutes, but he's not acting like someone who understands what the problem is there.
I want to thank everyone for submitting their topics and questions over at Substack. And if you're not a subscriber and would like to become one, please go to samharris.org/subscribe. That was very Ben Shapiro of me. All right. Okay, Sam, I want to ask you about going.
No, now you have to sell some gold, don't you? Isn't that the way we?
No, VPN? I don't know what it is. Okay. Yeah. I want to ask you about the ongoing tariff negotiations. Bird flu. I want to talk about Pete Buttigieg a bit more on Bill Maher's White House dinner that seems like it was a year ago now. Mm. I want to talk about Trump's son's latest venture and more. But before I want to get into, have you seen how Vietnam has responded to this, the 46% tariff that Trump hit them with?
This is who knows what's going to happen in the end. But their immediate response was to invite Starlink to give them their country's internet coverage and to green light a, I think it was a $1.5 billion
correct
development deal
you've been making this exact joke. Like, Trump will do anything as long as he gets a resort there. And now,
yeah, I mean, it's so, this should be the only story. I mean, there's 1,000 things, any one of which should be the only story. I mean, everything should stop. The whole machine should stop on this point, right? We have a president who is using U.S. foreign policy, right? I mean, and he's putting a stick in the wheel of the entire global economy, right? He's using U.S. foreign policy to negotiate deals that are explicitly advantageous to his family and his friends. How is this remotely acceptable to anyone, left or right? I don't understand it. I don't understand how anyone with a reputation to preserve in the Republican Party isn't aghast at this behavior. Because again, it's all in plain view. The only problem, which you know Steve Bannon brilliantly realized years ago, is that there's so much of it that nobody knows how to respond, right? You just flood the zone with shit and you win because no one can keep all of these awful things in view simultaneously. But I mean, this one thing alone, a $1.5 billion Trump Organization deal in Vietnam being greenlit as a way of reducing the tariff burden that our country is imposing on that country, that's completely insane. It's beyond, I mean, forget conflicts of interest. This is just pure corruption. This is pure bakshish.
But it's not that one thing alone. Eric and Don Jr. are aggressively expanding international business deals, especially in the Middle East and Europe, using the Trump brand for real estate, crypto ventures, and a new $500,000 membership club in D.C.
Oh, yeah, we opened this with David Sachs, right? Nothing corrupt about this. Pay 500 grand to hang out with Trump and his sons.
We have you on the waiting list, unfortunately.
Yeah. The thing that's endlessly mystifying is how no one cares, right? And caring, apparently there's nothing to do even if you do care, right? It's like, where is Congress? Where are the courts in this? Clearly we don't have the laws we need that would be automatically triggered by these reports because it's just, people should be going to jail for this, right? I mean, this is not normal. And if the fact that it's not normal was only guaranteed by norms rather than laws in the past, we need new laws. But whatever normal president we get someday, that person's job is going to be to do a postmortem on this period of American history and try to figure out how we can never have this happen again.
Is this what you had in mind when you said you didn't care what was on Hunter Biden's laptop?
Exactly. I still don't care what was on the laptop. I still haven't heard anything that was important on that laptop, right? Like, if that laptop was really as significant as...
It wasn't anything we just talked about.
Was there
none of that
anything
there
on there that we should care about, right? It's unbelievable. I mean, we're talking about a Republican Party that thought we should care about John Podesta's emails about pizza orders, right? Because they were code for, you know, pedophile rape, right? Like, this is the fever dream this period of American history has been subsumed by. We quite literally have the people who gave us Pizzagate waltzing into the Oval Office and helping the president decide policy. It's unbelievable, right? And it's so I don't see how, I mean, the Bill Ackmans of the world and the Ken Griffins and the serious people who just thought they were going to get lower taxes and de-wokeify the Ivy League, I just don't see how they're not keeping track of this and recognizing the magnitude of their error.
Yeah, well, I mean, there is something wrong in the psychology because it does, I don't know why it feels gross when Hunter Biden does it. It feels like it's hidden and secret. And the Trumps, they're just doing it right out in front of you. And it doesn't feel as bad, even though it's just much worse. There's just something that doesn't feel dirty about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a moral illusion that I don't think we completely understand, but it's something we have to figure out how to correct for. I mean, I agree. I perceive it as well. I mean, there's something... This is not just our experience. I mean, this is kind of a famous artifact of fascism and authoritarianism generally. I mean, there are many of these figures appear comical until it's far too late, right? I mean, this was true of Hitler. This was true of, every degree of this. Hitler's obviously the extreme case, but, Berlusconi. I mean, lots of these people who erode the democratic norms of their society to one or another degree, and in some cases fatally, Chavez in Venezuela, they are comical figures a lot of the time.
Right.
And let's put this in the file of marked, we're entertaining ourselves to death.
I want to pick up on Bill Maher's White House dinner. I know it already feels like it happened a long time ago, but I do think his intention should matter here. And even if he found himself in an unwinnable situation, when we last discussed it, I don't think we gave him enough credit for pushing back on Trump. And whatever concerns I think we may have had seem to potentially have been unwarranted given the way he's been speaking on his recent episodes. I don't know if you had any updated thoughts here you wanted to share on that.
Yeah. I mean, that's actually something I regret. I mean, first, let me say I've been spending a lot of time criticizing friends and former friends and a few people who are now enemies, kind of official enemies like Elon. I mean, so it's, and in some cases, I've been criticizing them as a group, right? I mean, I've been bouncing between talking about Rogan and Lex Fridman and people I, you know, haven't met, other podcasters I haven't met, Andrew Schultz, right? I mean, so Dave Smith. And when I'm stringing a lot of people together like that in a sentence, it can seem like I'm criticizing them all to precisely the same degree and for precisely the same thing. And that's just not true. I mean, Lex got very pissed off that I seemed to criticize him in the exact same vein as I was criticizing Rogan. I was, you know, I was talking about Rogan not doing his homework, and you know, he doesn't know that he's talking to a Holocaust denier or a revisionist when he's talking to Daryl Cooper, who's recycling David Irving. But obviously, Lex does a tremendous amount of homework for his interviews, and he pushed back, I believe, on X around that. I got to say, I think I've been a little sloppy here, and it's in part just because it's just impossible to be speaking in footnoted sentences endlessly. But with Bill, I think I was quite sloppy not to acknowledge that in his postmortem on that dinner, he made it very clear that he, to use his term, spoke truth to power, right? He said many uncomfortable things to Donald Trump's face, and that was part of what that errand was about, in his view. I think that's great. And again, I understand how tempting it was for him to go to that dinner. I mean, it seems, you know, speaking truth to power aside, it seems just unambiguously good to try to build bridges between to cross the divide in this country, right? Like Bill's line, I think, was, what are we supposed to just keep shouting at each other from 3,000 miles away or something like that? And the answer to that, I think, obviously is no, except I do think his dinner with Trump was just doomed for all the reasons I alleged, right, in my previous criticism, right? I think it was probably possible to know in advance, but it's understandable that it wasn't obvious in advance. I just think there's no way to come away from that dinner. There's no lesson to be drawn from a private experience with Donald Trump, you know, however charismatic, however discordant it is with his public persona, or however concordant it would be. I mean, there's no variant of it which sheds any light on the actual harm he's doing in the world. I mean, those harms are what they are. They require their reaction, you know, as Bill knows, you know, as he has demonstrated, he'll continue to react to those harms. So I just think the having had this experience with Trump in private and reporting on it was just bound to be confusing to his audience. It was bound to be controversial in a way that I think was just not helpful to Bill's job or to really to much of anything. So, I mean, I stand by what I said there, especially because the one thing that was really confusing about it is that it's not clear ethically to me which is worse. I mean, if Trump is just as much of a maniac behind closed doors, or if he's actually a normal and completely, you know, genial and orderly and rational guy behind closed doors. It was not clear to me. I don't know if it's clear to Bill which of those is worse. I mean, to be able to just perform like this psychopath in public, or to actually just be the psychopath who's helplessly being one in public, or to be such a psychopath that you can perform like a perfectly normal person in private, right? And yet be the psychopath you really are in public. I just, like, any version of this is evil in my view, or at least adjacent to evil. So it was just bound to be a mystifying communication for Bill's audience. And so I'm not surprised by the reception, but I just don't think the big miss for me was, you know, as a friend of Bill's, it was just a mistake for me not to emphasize the good parts of what he attempted to do there, which you pointed out.
Well, that apology and acknowledgement might throw off this next question a bit, but you get criticism from time to time from some who claim you never admit when you're wrong. But here's another thing I think you got wrong. Before the election, you predicted that if we got Trump for four more years, we'd get even more wokeness, but we didn't. Almost immediately after he was elected, it felt like the wokeness took its last breath. Sam, what do you have to say for yourself?
Yeah, well, I think there's a reason I'm not in the prediction business. I mean, it's this is, I think, that certainly at the moment, disconfirmed. I mean, I understand why I had that intuition, but I'm certainly not seeing it play out that way. I think the far left and certainly the normal left are still shell-shocked by the results of the 2024 election and Trump's first 100 days. I think it's, Kamala Harris's loss was, again, overdetermined, but her embrace or her lack of, disavowal of woke pieties was so obviously a problem. That part alone was, was so decisive. His ad, she's for they, them, he's for you. I mean, that was that was just like the dunk of all dunks. I mean, that was, Michael Jordan in the dunk contest in his absolute best dunk ever. Politically, I mean, it's just the most effective political communication I can imagine, right? I mean, it was absolutely a coup de grace from my point of view to her campaign. And there were probably a few others, but just the fact that when she was asked about that specific issue, it was always word salad, right? Or it was always stonewalling, right? That was just the end of the campaign. And it didn't matter how good she did at the debate. It was the end. I think that lesson has permeated Democratic circles to a significant degree. And so I think we're witnessing this could be a little wish casting on my part. And I could yet be proven wrong about this too. But I think we're witnessing some kind of hard reset with respect to that, social justice hysteria. It's not to say that there aren't some people still out there saying that, the reason why we lost was that we were not fully, committed enough to intersectional, four-dimensional chess. But I just think the people who have a prayer of getting elected in these next elections are not going to listen to those people.
Well, I want to stay there because I think, as it was the podcast election, and I think Kamala tried to do a few podcasts, she just did not come across as a good hang. And juxtapose that with, obviously, Trump being a great hang. But Pete Buttigieg, did you see him on Andrew Schultz's podcast recently? I don't know if you saw the clips.
I think I just saw a clip. I did see a clip, but I did not see the whole podcast.
Well, he was recently commenting about how, on there that there are these rallies and they need to push back on Trump, and that's making the difference. And I think that what's so obvious that's going to make the difference is Buttigieg going on these types of programs and others hanging out for a couple hours was a real difference maker. I mean, he's just, I also only saw a few of the clips, but there's no pomp and circumstance. The guy was totally likable. He was cool. He was relatable. And really, that's what the Dems need to do. They need to, I keep hearing they have a deep bench, but if they don't put them on camera to hang out and let people witness them and spend time with them, it doesn't matter. And so that was really the first time when I saw Pete go on, I thought, okay, this was the first time I was hopeful for the Democrats for 2028. And I don't think Kamala's got that sort of game. And I know how you feel about Newsom. Trust me, I promise you, I dislike him more, but I really do like that he's been making that effort to get out on camera. We need more stars. They need more stars. They need to be out there. And so I don't know what's going to happen going forward, but it is so obvious to me that if we have stars, we need to get them on camera. And Pete did a phenomenal job. And
he's a great communicator. There's no question that.
But he's a great hang too. He was a great hang. You got to watch him hang. It was like you could get that across. I remember they used to say it was 20 something years ago. Who would you rather have a beer with? This is now just it's much more. It's that on steroids.
Well, so authenticity is a noun that has been referenced a lot in this context, and I think it's as important as people suspect. I mean, that's the thing that what you're calling a hang is the successful display of seeming authenticity, right? I mean, and the problem with Trump is that he also wins on authenticity points because he's just authentically an awful person, and he displays that, and his fans rejoice, right? So, like, that's but there is an authenticity there that again Kamala Harris couldn't muster, right? I mean, to have focus group talking points and to be worried about touching the third rails of intersectional woke nonsense. I mean, that is a disaster for any politician. And so, insofar as someone like Buttigieg or Newsom or anyone else isn't encumbered by all that. I mean, I think authenticity is what they're going to have to display to succeed in this next round. My problem with Newsom isn't so much personal. I mean, I've said I don't know the guy, but I just think he, you know, his personal issues aside, I mean, his backstory, which has a few quirks and you know, skeletons that I think you wouldn't even have to do Oppo research to magnify to his disadvantage. But beyond the French laundry of it all and the sleeping with your best friend's wife of it all, again, those two things shouldn't be fatal if you were at all tempted to vote for Trump. But he's just going to be the albatross that will be hanging around his neck is the reputation of California for the other 49 states, you know, fictional or not, right? I mean, some of that reputation is undeserved, but some of it's real. Doesn't matter how much we improve in the meantime, it's going to be so easy to cut together the ad of just the, you know, the fentanyl addled zombies in San Francisco, you know, marching down the alleyways, and you got Newsom standing there, you know, pointing to all the success he's produced in his state. I just don't see how you overcome that. And so it's just not going to be the person who gave us California getting the White House next time around.
Okay, Sam, I want to go into this last question. You recently made a post in support of Ezra Klein's work, and you've signal boosted him in the past, and all of this was after your collision with him many years back. So you're obviously a fan of the things he says, and it's clear we're dealing with a different Ezra Klein now. Why can't you just bury the hatchet and work together? Okay, I want to just jump in and answer this for a second. I really don't think people understand how bad this could have been for you. And, you know, had you not had your own audience and had you been slightly less famous, this could have been terrible. I mean, if you were a professor somewhere, you would have been fired, no question. And so I think there's this feeling sometimes that you're being a little petty for not burying the hatchet, but I don't think anyone stopped to think for a second what they would do here or what they might be asking for. You know, I know you're not carrying any resentment, but I don't think it's crazy to want some sort of acknowledgement that at least you're both clear and you're looking at the same issue the same way now. And even if it's not about you personally, Ezra did play a role in creating much of what he's pushing back on now. And I don't think it's petty to think that it would be nice for him to acknowledge that. And perhaps not just changing course is not enough. It would be nice to hear him say, okay, you know, I'm not doing that anymore. But, you know, perhaps it is enough. I don't know. What do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, so to go to the place you started, I forwarded his piece, and I've done that a few times, you know, since we had our collision. Just because I, you know, I don't really care about the messenger. If it was useful to have out there, I mean, if a useful set of ideas, you know, I can forward those ideas, right? I mean, I just think that's good for the world. Yeah, I mean, the irony is I think we probably agree about, you know, 98% of things politically at this moment. I mean, I would guess. I can't say I follow him all that closely, but, I see some of what he's doing. But I mean, it just comes down to an issue of kind of personal integrity. I don't think he understands what he did some years ago in our collision and how unethically he behaved, right, as a journalist. I just don't think, I mean, if he understands it, then he certainly hasn't admitted that, right? I mean, this, you know, if I understood that about myself, the first thing I would do would be to apologize. He was part of the woke enforcement brigade back in whenever that was, 2017, I mean, he was the tip of the spear, or among the people who were at the tip of the spear, effectively canceling people, and he effectively tried to get me canceled. And I mean, as you say, I had a more precarious position, certainly one where I could have been fired, I think I would have been, based on the amount of misinformation he spread about me. And so, yeah, I think it was totally unethical, and it was harmful, and it helped create the environment that gave us Trump this time. I mean, I didn't really follow his activity prior to the moment it was aimed at me, right? So I don't know how bad he was in 2014 or 2015. But yeah, there was just a lot of progressive identitarian nonsense. And I'll remind people that, you know, at the time of our collision, he thought one of my great failings was that he literally inventoried the list of podcast guests I'd had at that point. I mean, maybe I'd done 100 podcasts at that point. And he noticed how many white faces there were and how few black faces, and that was definitely a strike against me. And he recommended as a soul cleansing remedy that I read Ibram X. Kendi, the moral genius who he had in hand at that point. I mean, Ibram X. Kendi is just a grifter and an academic imposter to my eye, and I would be amazed if if Ezra thought differently at this point, given what he's been up to in recent years. So that, I mean, that's where Ezra was, and he behaved really badly and dishonestly. So it's like, it's not...
Right, but I think when you say that, I think people don't understand, because had I not been behind the curtain with you, I would think you're being petty and just, come on, Sam, you guys really could join forces and it could be great. But to just to understand how close, again, it could have been had you not had an audience that you had built, it could have been much worse. And it was bad. I mean, the fact that...
But honestly, it's still bad. It's still, there's still harm done. There's still many, many people out there who think, okay, well, where there's smoke, there's got to be fire. And, you know, they do, they hear something about what I'm up to. They see a clip online. They like what I've said. They're seeing me for the first time. They check me out. They don't have to dig very deep to see that, okay, this guy has been called a racist and a pseudoscientist and in pretty high places. And the articles are still there in Vox to read, right? They don't know that academics came to my defense, and, you know, one of the most prominent researchers on, you know, that whole issue of IQ came to my defense, and, you know, Vox under Ezra's stewardship wouldn't print his rebuttal as though they had run out of pixels on the website. And so all that damage is still being done, right? And it just doesn't matter to me because I'm impervious to it, but it just as a matter of my career, right? Just like I never shows up, but I just know that there are people who suspect I'm racist even now. And it's because of what Ezra did at that point, the amount of slime he threw in my direction. And he's never recognized that one, how dishonest it was, because he knows I'm not a racist, right? I'll give him at least that much credit. He's not that confused. And he attempted a kind of reputational murder. That attempt is ongoing because the material is still out there. People are discovering it even now for the first time. And so, you know, I mean, this is part of this is indelible. I mean, however many years from now, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years from now, you know, I have an obituary and my daughters have to read that their father was, you know, in certain circles suspected of being a racist jerk. That's going to be because of what Ezra successfully did back in whenever that was, 2017. That's a cost, right? And it's an unfair cost because I actually, you know, he and I both know that I find racism as appalling as he does, right? And yet he worked very hard to produce that outcome. That's just not ethical. It's not journalism. It's part of what, you know, this environment of, you know, casual defenestration of good people that produced this monstrosity on the right so successfully, which is Trumpism. He has to own a significant piece of that. And there's a short list of people who I would put in his class of having done that much harm to our political discourse. So the fact that he seems to have his head screwed on straight now around, you know, identitarian nonsense, oh, that's great. But he hasn't admitted, at least I haven't noticed him admit, just how far he's come on that journey and what sort of casualties he's left in his wake. I mean, because there are many of us who understood exactly which end was up morally and politically at the time. And he wasn't one of them, right? He was at war with us. And, you know, the fact that he understands what's real now and what's, you know, politically sane now, that's good. And I'll still forward his articles or his podcast when he's making sense, because again, none of this is personal. But it's just real harm was done. And again, and it's still being done. And I'm just incredibly lucky to have, you know, with your help and with the help of other people on the team, to have found a way of doing business here that leads me not to have to worry about any of that.
Okay, well, I think that context was helpful and thanks for sharing that. I just don't think enough people really understand when they say, oh, Sam should bury the hatchet and maybe he's being petty. I don't think they understand everything that happened there. And so I think that's helpful. And thanks again for sitting down and answering some of these questions. I know the fans appreciate it. I appreciate it. And I look forward to doing some more with you.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I will do this as long as it's useful. It's fun.